My darling Cocoa, my princess Athea, come listen to me. Your loving mommy, Medofo Cocoa Orima. Hello, get ready to be moved and soothed. It's time to hear from the musicians and the mums involved in the fabulous Lullaby Project taking off in Cheshire and Merseyside. I'm Caroline Kenyon, and in our last podcast, we heard a recording of the first part of an event that I hosted during Baby Week. We now return to the event as I introduce the people making the music with the mums.
So we're going to hear now from Live Music Now, who are the partner with the Cheshire and Merseyside Women's Health and Paternity Programme in delivering Lullaby in our region. So I'm going to introduce Karen Irwin, Danny Gillett, and musicians Pip Bryan and Georgina Asgard. And I know we're going to hear some Lullaby music, so I'm really, really looking forward to this. Karen is the Strategic Director for Children and Young People at Live Music Now, which is a charity set up by Yehudi Menuhin and Ian Stoutska 44 years ago. So Karen, over to you to tell us a little bit about Live Music Now and how you're working.
Sure. Well, just to pick up, so Live Music Now is a charity working and campaigning to create positive and lasting social impact through music. We've got over 200 professional musicians working with us, and they're delivering person-centred music programmes in schools, hospitals, adult social care, community settings, and of course, more recently over the last year, online as well. And we do our work in partnership with organisations such as Improving Me. And by evaluating the work, we can see how personalised music programmes can really enhance people's health and well-being. For example, by boosting confidence, developing communication skills, promoting that social interaction, and creativity as well. And all of this then helps to support agency, control, and choice in people's lives. And we truly believe that musicians can play a pivotal role in society, so helping, you know, contributing to make happier, healthier, and more resilient communities. So when the pandemic hit, we were already sort of talking with Joe and colleagues at Improving Me, just looking at how we could connect with the NHS agenda around early intervention through music and social prescribing, and particularly looking at how we could use music to reduce social isolation. And that was very, extreme for a lot of families throughout the lockdowns. And that's really where the journey began, Caroline, for Lullaby.
So, you work in different settings, I know, don't you? You've just said 200 musicians. Can you just explain to us what those different settings are?
Sure. So a lot of our work takes place in special schools. Across the UK, we work in around 20% of special educational needs settings. We also, where we're delivering sort of longer term programmes as well as concerts and performances. We work with Alderhay Children's Hospital. We've had a long-term partnership there. And we also have a side to our work. So that's sort of 50% of our work is probably with children and young people, and the rest of it is with older people, often living with dementia or isolated within the community. And we provide specialist training for our musicians to deliver these person-centred music programmes, really helping people to have musical lives, because we know music can contribute to the health and well-being side of things.
Great. We met a year ago when we had our first Baby Week, and work started getting underway then, didn't it, to introduce Lullaby Project. Can you bring us up to date and tell us what's actually happened in the last year with Lullaby?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, despite it being such a full-on year, it's been absolutely fantastic to develop these new strands of work. And, you know, Tiffany was talking about working online, and that's something that we've really embraced over the last year, and it's opened up all sorts of new opportunities to connect with socially isolated families. So one of the first things that we did sort of following last year's Baby Week, we used some of the funding to scope out some new activity with the family engagement team, and that was particularly looking at how we could support isolated families in the community. We developed our first online program, family program called Including Me, where we worked with 15 families and over a series of 10 online music sessions, we paired a musician with the family, and they had great time exploring, creating music, performing music, and just, you know, having positive interaction through music. We worked with the children, young people in the family, but the parents and carers were very much part of that session too. And we worked with Deka and Bannon to recruit families onto that programme. And that's been one of the really interesting things, is learning how we can adapt our work to fit in with that NHS pathway, and in particularly around the referrals, again, getting the right people onto the programme at the right time.
And has it all been online then, what you've done so far in Cheshire Merseyside?
Yes, it's all, well, we've had a couple of concerts to bring families together quite recently at the Museum of Liverpool, but basically it's been online, and that's helped us develop new ways of working, finding out how you can deliver music sessions online, what works, what doesn't work, and that includes the practical aspects of, you know, have participants got the equipment required, the broadband? And, you know, one of the things that we have had to work around is that digital disadvantage, where families may not have the equipment. But with support from the family engagement team, we've been able to work around that and support families to connect into the programmes.
And that might be a good moment to bring in the community engagement team, do you think? Shall we introduce... Yeah. Danny Gillett, and also I know we've got online joining us Deka Moose and Benin Ali. So Danny, over to you. Could you tell us a little bit about how you actually go about identifying the people who are going to benefit from Lullaby, and how do you reach out to them and encourage them and support them in taking part?
Hiya. Hi. So basically the biggest thing for us was reaching communities that we wouldn't always reach. So trying to, so although we had social media and our Maternity Voices partnerships as kind of a key link into some of the communities, we realised that that kind of limited some of the outreach of the communities that are sometimes harder to reach. So that's kind of where Banin and Deka came into their communities, and they would use their WhatsApp groups, their local religious and like centres and things like that. So we were able to find those that were isolated a lot more during COVID because of language barriers, children with SEND needs and things like that. So we supported them where, you know, you didn't have to be able to speak English to play music. So when it comes to the musicians, being able to chat to them, Binny and Daka were able to translate for them and support those families, and hopefully just give them a network of people so they join their own WhatsApp groups, they were able to network with themselves and give more of a community than what maybe we would have been able to reach otherwise.
That's amazing. So we've got to say hello to Banin and Deka and say thank you so much for that. Do you want to describe for us what was that experience like, Banin and Deka?
The experience was amazing, actually. We enjoyed it. The families enjoyed it so much. The children also enjoyed it. And many of them are looking forward to another program or another course for music. We got very good feedback from the families we interviewed. One of the parents actually told me that her child teacher said, "What happened to this child? His confidence increased, communication skills, and he became more calmer." So a lot of positive feedback we get from families.
Thank you. We're going to hear how we measure success. I mean, you've just said that was successful, and I can just hear that it would be successful. It would have a big impact. But how do you measure that? So we're going to hear a little bit about that shortly from Dr. Kerry Wilson of Liverpool John Moores University, who's going to, I'm going to invite to say a few words. But first of all, Karen, I'm going to hand over to you because I'm looking forward and hoping we're going to hear some music now.
So we are just almost at the end of our first pilot lullaby project, and it's just been the most fantastic and uplifting experience. We've run the programme online, learning from the Carnegie Hall and Philadelphia model, and also our work on including me with the family engagement team. So we learned a lot from that. And what we've done, we've been working with 8 women over the last couple of months. We invited women to apply for the programme and then worked with the engagement team to select the participants for the first cohort. The women are from across the Cheshire Merseyside region, and we've paired them each with one of our musicians, and it's lovely to have all 4 of our musicians here today. We've got Alice and Chris here, as well as Georgina and Pip. So what we did was all the musicians made a video to say hello to the mum that they would be working with and introduce their music. So that was, and then they had 5 online one-to-one sessions to write their lullabies. And we used the Carnegie Hall journal. So this is our project journal, and that has prompts and cues where the mums have been writing a letter to their babies, and from that taking the lyrics for their lullabies and working with their musicians to create the songs, and you'll hear some of that later on. We then have just recorded the lullaby, so we invited the participants to come along to a recording studio in Liverpool, and the lullabies were recorded literally last Monday and Thursday, so it's all hot off the press. And we've had a fantastic filmmaker working with us to try and document this first project, and he's been able to capture some lovely moments from the recordings. And it's a special part of this project. Georgina and Pip were able to do an in-person visit to some of the mum's houses, and we've also managed to capture that on film as well to show you. So rather than me waffling on, it's much better to hear directly from the musicians who have been delivering the work. So I'm absolutely delighted to introduce, first of all, Georgina Asgard, who is a professional cellist, leading a groundbreaking career in music and health. Georgina is the musician in residence at Alderhay Children's Hospital. She was awarded the Merseyside Woman of the Year Award in 2019. And this year, she's working with Live Music Now, having received a very prestigious National Institute of Health Research pre-doctoral fellowship. And that's exploring music and social prescribing and how music, non-clinical music interventions can support mental health and well-being. So Georgina has been the lead musician for this Northwest Lullaby project. And I'll also just introduce Pip while we're here as well. So Pip is one of our fantastic and versatile Northwest musicians. She's a classically trained flautist and vocalist, but plays all sorts of different types of music. Also works in Alderhay as a musician in residence, having been trained by Georgina, and delivers a lot of our residencies in schools and care settings across the region. So Georgina and Pip have both been working with families on the project. And I'm going to hand over to Georgina to tell you a bit more about her work.
Oh, thank you so much, Karen. So I'd like to just go straight in and talk to you about Victoria, the mom I was paired with. I've had the privilege to work with Victoria. She's a young professional mother in her mid-30s and who says she has a boring job as an accountant, but she loves writing poems and regularly sings to her child. She's studied languages, so she thought it was nice to be paired with somebody who's French like me. So her lonely child Molly is 15 months and she was not part of the online sessions from the beginning. I think Victoria took the lullaby session as a bit of me time, and she had her partner Rob to look after the baby. And on the first session, Victoria said she wanted to create something that would last forever. She wanted her lullaby to be calm and peaceful. And she mentioned that one of her favorite lullaby was Bonnie Flies Over the Ocean, which I played for her on the cello. Stopped. She said she had found the sound of the cello really emotional and that it made her feel something inside that she'd never felt before. And she went on saying that the sound made her think of one of her favorite pieces of classical music, the Pachelbel Canon, which we managed to sneak in into the lullaby. And so quite simply and instantly, we had gathered like a few musical ideas that seemed to be a really inspiring starting point for Victoria to write her lullaby and to explore her creative skills. By the following week, she had written pretty much the whole of her lyrics based on four keywords that she had used in her journal to describe Molly, referring to her smell, her skin, her eyes, and her cuddles. And it meant a lot to her as well to sing in different languages, as she said she wished for Molly to be open to different cultures. So that's how we ended up with a multilingual chorus, and it which said, "Sweet dreams, sweet Molly, dodo doucement mon amour, duerme tranquilla mi niña, dormi bene mia piccola." And from the start, Victoria also said she couldn't sing. So I was on a mission, and for me, it was really important to make sure that Victoria could gain confidence in finding her voice through the process. We spoke about that 6-8 rhythm. Having this gentle rocking element, we discussed and tried different speeds. And we also laughed at the fact that we were saying if we played it much faster, this lullaby could actually turn into a waltz for Molly's wedding. And we went. So we kind of had this little dream of turning this lullaby into a waltz eventually. Poor Molly, whether she would like it or not, we don't know. So we took the rhythm from Bonnie Flies Over the Ocean and made a very simple melodies that we sang first in call and answer, which she felt comfortable with because it was familiar. And over the weeks, we exchanged text messages, refining the order of the words, and I sent her regular voice memos so that she could sing along to what she had, to what we had worked on during the sessions. And then we met in real life. So that was our third session, which was like such a highlight, especially as I got to meet Molly for the first time and Rob, Victoria's partner. And as we all know, the experience of meeting somebody live after having spent time on Zoom is always such a special feeling. And that live session was decided a bit last minute, as originally this was set to be an online project. So it involved quite a few logistics. It felt like an invasion being with Alan, our filmmaker, turning up with all his gear, and me, another stranger with a big red cello case on my back. And at first, Molly was like seemingly shell-shocked. But as soon as I got my cello out, she crawled towards me and she rested a little hand at the front of my cello, simply like mesmerized and intrigued by this instrument that's twice her size and that she had never seen or heard before. And I'm always amazed at how such level of connection can be created by something really unfamiliar, and especially for little ones. It was the first time, I think, for the whole family to experience the sight and the sound of the cello. I started with the bass line of the song, humming the song with Victoria. Molly stopped and with like an air of saying, "Ooh, this song sounds familiar." And then we went on singing the whole song together, which was such a moving moment because I realized Victoria had a beautiful voice and it definitely helped for that to be in the same room. So I think Karen's going to show a little clip now from my home visit. Skin to skin, heart to heart, remember this song if we are apart. Words will hug you, Molly, my dear, and you'll feel calm like my ma is near. Sweet baby Molly, I can't believe you're mine. Mama will love you until the end of time. Oh, thank you. I think Victoria seemed to really enjoy our reflection time at the end of each session. And so after the first session, she wrote she had had a very busy and hectic day and felt a bit frazzled at the beginning of the session. But at the end of the session, she said she felt much calmer and much more relaxed. So she also said that even though she was concerned that she had added yet another task to her ever-growing to-do list, as she said, by signing up to this program, within 10 minutes of the first session, she felt she could feel, it was so nice how she described it. She said she could feel an excitement brewing about the writing process and was so looking forward to the finished product. She mentioned a few times that the music made her feel very emotional, and then it was kind of an emotion that didn't appear often within her. So maybe we can show the next little clip from Victoria's interview. Thank you, Karen.
So I studied languages at university, so it's always something that I've been quite passionate about. And then we go to a baby Spanish class, so I've been teaching Molly a few words, and we do a lot of singing in Spanish. So some of the nursery rhymes she's only ever heard in Spanish and not actually in English, and she reacts to them as well. So I just thought that that would be nice to try and explore that side of things. And then obviously when I was paired with you and your French who's lived in Spain, I just thought, well, I feel like it's inspired me to write more of the poetry and maybe explore that avenue a little bit more. To balance off my my boring job, as I put it. So I've really enjoyed the process, and I'm amazed at how quickly it feels like it's come together. Yeah. I thought it would be, I've really enjoyed it, and I felt like it's flowed, whereas I thought it'd be like really difficult, and I'd be panicking, thinking, oh, we haven't got anything. But I feel like in the first sort of session, we set a really good direction, and it's just flowed from there.
Oh, thank you. I think, you know, after the 5 weeks of delivery, it was just so amazing to come together with the other musicians, Pip, Chris and Alice, into a recording studio where we shared our stories with our respective moms and the wonderful lullabies that are also each so different from each other. And I must officially give a big shout out to Andrew, our sound engineer, who was so accommodating, and all these details really made a difference. And he basically turned his recording studio to what sometimes felt like a nursery, and even created a nappy change unit in a flash for us. So timings were really tight because we hadn't foreseen that so many moms would want to be part of the recording sessions. We had to give them a 20 minute slot to come and record. Victoria came alone and she was really excited about the experience being in the studio with the professionals, as she said. And before she came, she said she would only sing the chorus, but brilliantly supported by Pip, she ended up recording the whole song, which for me summed up really our whole journey together so beautifully, as it seems to have opened in Victoria a really important creative outlet, a sense of ownership, and mainly a process that helped her gain so much confidence. So maybe we can show the little clip from the recording. Thank you, Karen. Let's go back to the bell. Thank you. Oh, thank you. This, I've been singing this for weeks without any end. But anyway, I'll conclude with just a quick note on where we're at with the project evaluation. And Kerry Wilson will tell you more in a few minutes. I designed reflective diaries for both participants and musicians based on the PERMA scale that was introduced to me by Kerry. So PERMA standing for positive emotion or negative emotion, E for engagement, R for relationships, M for meaning, A for achievement. And the aim was to really capture participants' voices about how the project may have influenced their well-being and to gather first-hand data that can be fed directly into Kerry's research. So Karen's just put up the questions. We kind of adapted them as well. And for me, it was just really crucial to make time for that moment of reflection with the participant at the end of each session. And Victoria seemed to really enjoy the process of filling in the reflective diary. She would always send it back within a couple of hours after the session. But I'm aware that maybe not every participant would be happy to do the same. For me, every session had a real sense of adventure. And as we were tuning into each other week by week, and what I love the most about this project is that the creative process was shared on an equal level. We helped each other finding our ways into the creation of the lullaby. And as a musician, it felt really, I was being kept on my toes to ensure that I was responding to Victoria's needs and wishes in the best possible way. So I suppose for me, it was really a listening project where the creative process is equally shared. There's no hierarchy, there's no judgment. And I saw the process as a kind of celebration of Victoria's creativity and individuality. And in the last 2 weeks of working together, Victoria sent a few texts saying she had managed to send Molly to sleep with her lullaby, which was so lovely to hear. I loved getting those texts. And only on the last session, Victoria told me that she had been part of a choir years ago. And she had decided to rejoin that choir after Christmas, which was just so amazing to hear. I just feel so happy thinking about the outcomes of this project, reflecting on the incredible joy and emotions we all shared in the recording studio a few days ago. Victoria wrote to me a lovely text saying, "Oh, thanks so much for making it so enjoyable for me. You made me feel very relaxed from the start. I've had the best experience and I loved being in the studio. I really feel lucky to have had the opportunity to do this. So I'd like to give something back to help if I can. And I'm more than happy to talk to other moms about the process." So that was just amazing. I just got this text a couple of days ago. And for me, it was just been such a privilege to be able to develop that close connection with Victoria through music, through a creative process, and to feel that you become part of somebody's intimacy as they express and they share their most inner feelings. And as a musician, it feels really special to be let into that space. So I will now let the music speak to say thank you so much. It's just been an incredible experience. Right. Thank you so much. And I'll hand on to Pip, who's been so amazing to collaborate with on this project. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Georgina. Thanks, Karen. It's been such a fantastic experience. So I've just popped on today to talk to you a little bit about my experience and who I worked with. So I worked with two moms during this project, Colette and Sophie, and I had four online sessions with each of them. And then the final session, I felt very lucky that we were able to make it work, that I went and visited them in their homes face to face. That was lovely. So this afternoon, I'm going to focus on the work that I did with Sophie and her son, Ruben, and share a few reflections on the creative process, similarly to Georgina, and we'll also share a little bit of the lullaby that we wrote together. Before we met online for the first time, I recorded a short hello video and played my flute for Sophie and Ruben to try and break the ice a little bit so that they could get to know me and Ruben could sort of recognize my face before I was suddenly on Zoom with them. And myself and Sophie chatted on Zoom before the first session. to make sure that she had everything she needed and find out a little bit about how she felt about the sessions and that kind of thing. She was really pleased to have the lullaby journal, and I have to say that in both of my sessions with both my mums, the lullaby journals were a really invaluable tool in terms of giving that sort of springboard for different ideas and offering a window into insight of what the mums wanted to do with their lullabies and where they'd like to take it. So it was really interesting, I have to say, to work with two mums on the project and see how they each responded to the experience, this experience of writing a lullaby. And I actually shared with my mums that it was also my first experience of the project and doing the sessions. And I felt like that, like Georgina was saying, it was very much, there was no hierarchy. We were absolutely on this adventure and this journey together. And I felt quite a big sense of responsibility in order to be able to, fulfill their dreams of what they wanted their lullaby to be. And it was a responsibility in order to, help them get their ideas into their song. So with Sophie, she sat and worked through quite a lot of her lullaby journal before our first session. And she said that she just began writing after sort of working through some of the activities in the book. This ignited so much in her. She found that she had so much to say. And so she began writing it. And before she knew it, she penned the lyrics and a structure for the whole song before our first session. So she came really prepared. And it was really interesting, actually, because it, as I was saying, with them sort of their different approaches to it, it was that Sophie was, she liked to be prepared, and we had to have, we had a clear plan for each week. And that was really, really interesting for me to see. And as I also found it quite good, because for our first session, for me, there was definitely so much to work with. So that was great from my point of view as well. So she'd come with her set of lyrics to the first session, and she even had some musical ideas for the chorus. So this seemed like a really good place to start. So and then we basically sort of worked on a different section of the song each week, and we would go through sort of the process of different musical questions or decisions and offering her the choice, like, oh, well, we could try it like this, let's try it like that, and what do they think, how does that feel, is that what you'd like, and how does it sound, not giving any sort of my own input first, trying to make sure that it was always led by Sophie first and foremost, like, how do you hear it going, what should happen here, and how would you like it to be. So this is great, and it was such a great bond, I think, that we seem to connect together on this level. And it was a really organic process, and it was fantastic. So I would send little voice memos after each session during the week, and if I tweaked anything or had a new idea or suggestion, I would send updates. And so we were definitely in contact a lot over WhatsApp, which was a really useful tool, and she was able to give feedback and also to practice along to the tracks, which was great. So the final section of her lyrics that she'd written, it had a totally different character to it. And in this section, she wanted it to be like a sort of repeated outro that she could sing to Reuben to get him to go to sleep. So we had a totally different feel for the music in this section of the song, and she wanted to be able to sort of sing it over and over. And I thought it might be nice to share that now. So there's a little clip of Sophie in the recording studio. And I've heard from Sophie that apparently it has been working at home, and Reuben has been going to sleep to this little bit of music. So if we can play this from the beginning, that would be lovely. Thank you so much, Karen.
Something that's just for Reuben. Nobody loves you quite like I do. So quiet now between us two. Nobody loves you like I do.
Thank you, Karen. So it was so great to see over the week that Reuben was really responding to Sophie's voice singing this song. And have to say it was so special that I got to visit them in their home. And it was really interesting. I think you'll see in one of the clips that he sort of was looking at me when I was in this house singing it too, sort of like, you know, it was almost as if he was saying, you know my song, like sort of almost looking at me going, what are you singing it to? You know, a bit surprised. So that was really lovely. And so I think there's also a little clip from our session that we did in our house that we could share, I think, Karen, if that's okay. This is us rehearsing.
Your eyes and smile and the
thank you. You can see that I think Ruben is so expressive with his hands. He was really sort of moving every time we played the song. He was either moving him side to side or tapping him or on his chest. And in the video when Georgina's holding it, it's really nice. He's doing twinkly fingers for his twinkly outro. Yeah, I think he hopefully really enjoyed the song. So in terms of the reflections, we would use Georgina's feedback forms and reflective diary forms each week, which was really useful. I found it a nice little way to sort of close the session and to sort of think like, right, well, what have we just done? It was a really nice way for us to sort of conclude, but also to make a plan for the next week, which I think, as I said, really suited the way that Sophie liked to think about things. It gave her a chance to prepare for what we would do next time. Sophie was really great. Sometimes we would fill out the session, the forms together at the end of the session, and other times, if Ruben needed to go for his sleep or whatever, then she would fill it in and send it back. But I took out a few little quotes I thought I would share with you today. So when she was asked how it felt to write her lullaby, she said, "It felt brilliant and it feels like a huge achievement." In one session, in response to the question, "Did the music making help your relationship with your child?" she said, "I've been singing this song to Ruben and he's really responding to it. It's lovely to see and I feel quite emotional." And finally, when asked about the creative process, she said, "It was really fun and I felt like my ideas were valued." So I was personally really pleased to hear that, because that was also good feedback for me, that she felt like that process was very much of a collaborative effort. There's also a short clip now of when I had a little chat with Sophie when I visited her at the home, and I asked her a few questions about how she felt about it.
I just started writing and I literally couldn't stop, and I was like, oh, I've obviously got all these kind of emotions about his journey and everything so far, and it just sort of came together. And then I was playing around with the amount of syllables. Do you remember when I first showed you? And I don't know if you expected me to have it all, but then I was like, oh, am I over prepared? But it just seems to have worked from day one, really. Like, and I've really enjoyed the process. And then I think I just picked out like key words from the descriptions that I'm, you know, the descriptive words I used of him, like, and the things that people have always said to me about him, like, oh my God, his eyes are amazing and he's so smiley and he's so warm. And so I was like, oh, that has to go in there. So it's just kind of like a general feel. And I think it's really, really special to have something so personal, and that Ruben can grow up with knowing that that was made for him. And yeah, it's really, really, really lovely process. And I'm really, really proud of what we've done.
Thank you, Karen. Great. So thank you so much. I mean, just to sort of conclude, really, I was asked about if there's any special moments and things like that from the project. And I have to say, it's just been a complete privilege to work alongside women like Sophie and help. I feel like it was an honour to be able to help to create their lullaby for their child and see firsthand really the impact that the sessions can have. There were lots of highlights. It's a bit hard to really choose, but I definitely say the sort of confidence that grew in the women that I worked with during the course of the sessions, they both shared with me once we knew each other, and you know, once we were sort of a couple of sessions in, they both shared that they'd felt a bit anxious about the whole thing and not sure how it was going to feel, and they both felt like much better about it, and that it was actually, you know, great, and they were really pleased. So I think the confidence in and feeling that their ideas were absolutely integral, obviously I knew that, but I think for them to feel that, you know, and to know that was really, really great. And similarly, both of my mums have said that they would love to join choirs now, and they're going to keep singing. One of them is going to take up the ukulele, so that is really exciting. And so I've left them with the chords and the charts so that they can learn to play their own ukulele that they've written. So that is really, really nice. And I think it was so special to really share in the experience when we all came together to record in the studio. It felt really nice to also meet the other mums, some of whom I had the pleasure of meeting at the Museum of Liverpool concert. So for us all to sort of be able to get together, we'd all had such unique experiences and connections with each of our mums, but that we were feeding into part of this broader experience and wider shared experience was like really inspiring and felt really, really special. So for every one of them to record their songs or with us all together just felt amazing, and I think it's one of the most special outcomes of the project for me as a musician to have been a part of that. So that's about it from me. Thank you so much for listening, and I thought we could finish by just sharing a short little clip of Sophie singing her lullaby in the studio if you'd like to hear it. Thank you.
Oh, actually, Pip, I think that was the first one that I played. I haven't got the little audio recording, but it might be, if we've got time at the end, we've got a few more little audio recordings to share, but perhaps it's best to hand back to Caroline so that we can hear from Denny and Kerry.
Okay, thanks, Karen. Thanks, Pip and Georgina. I was just getting tingles through listening to all of that, the music and from yourselves and the mums and those beautiful babies. So thank you so much. That's just lovely. So, I'd just like to introduce now Denny Palmer-Wolf of Wolf Brown, who is the lead researcher for Lullaby Project for Carnegie Hall. Hello, Denny.
Let me actually be present.
Thank you. And Denny, it's great to hear from Tiffany, and so I'm looking forward to hearing from you in particular about what you've achieved, and also as lead researcher, what you've learned through Lullaby. You're responsible for evaluating the work, aren't you? Do you want to just start off by telling us where you start with the evaluation of a creative activity like this?
Well, one thing I wanted to say is that we think about this centrally as affecting mums and babies, but I think we've had an astonishing moment today, which points to some other outcomes that we shouldn't forget. The ways in which this is an extraordinary experience for musicians and actually creates a generation or a group of musicians who have extraordinary listening skills as well as performing skills, and who will be an asset to their ensembles, to the hospitals in which they work, etc. I would also say, Deka and Banin are a complement in that, in terms of health and community workers who have been introduced to a whole new set of strategies for engaging communities. And then on our part, we have online both Kate Anderson and Todd Henkin, who are part of our research team. And so introducing the members of a research team to taking the arts quite seriously as a human endeavor, and one that's well worth looking at. So I just want to say at the outset, while of course it's about young families, I think we can't sell short what it may mean for a health system, for a conservatory, for a community. So that said, we when we were lucky enough to be here with you last time, we talked about a first round of outcomes. And in this last year, since we were with you, we've tried to expand on those outcomes in a number of ways. We've built a lullaby project, which is really an expanded lullaby project, which, as Tiffany said, has the 8 sessions, but also a number of different ways of interacting with families. Georgina and Pip have spoken actually to many of them, the use of text messaging as a way of building relationships, the lyrics themselves. But in addition to that, we noticed in the last round that the lullabies are very evocative for people, and that they bring up moments about their own childhood, good, bad, lost, present. And they bring up stories about how they, usually as moms, are experiencing the pandemic. And as Tiffany pointed out with the letter, what they hope for the future. So we've come to a place where we're saying, absolutely, yes, the lullaby and its outcomes for creativity and confidence with mothers. But also let's think about the many communities it's effective. And then let's also think about lullaby as an occasion, as a set of human activities, not only just the creation of the lyrics and the melody themselves. So we've, in the context of our most recent work, started to include something we call tiny moments, which are that in the introduction to a session, we ask caregivers to share with us a tiny moment from their child's daily life in the last week or their own daily life. And the emphasis here is very much on saying there is no moment too small and no activity insignificant. So we're interested in what's the daily texture of your life. And we've been collecting those both before and after sessions to look at change in those narratives. But we're also collecting them over time. So Tiffany, you want to share our screen? Yeah, so this is an example actually collected by, in the partnership with Todd Henkin, of a mom talking about a tiny moment. And what we've done here is to color code it with a bright blue showing what the mom is saying about herself, the dark blue about her own past, the purple about the past of the child, the bright pink what the child is contributing, and then the green for reflections on the experience of being a caregiver. So she says, I'm excited for the Christmas holidays. I like putting up the lights and stuff. As sucky as my childhood was, I have fond memories of like sitting in the Christmas lights and stuff. So I moved here last year and I had Christmas decorations of our own up, but see, that's her daughter. Didn't really enjoy it. I don't think she understood or appreciated the lights. So I'm trying to start decorating now, and I've gotten fairy lights for the banister, and I put them on and turned them on. And she was like, wow, like she really enjoyed seeing the lights. So I am very excited about putting up our tree. It's going to take time, obviously, but I'm hoping to get everything up by Thanksgiving. And so I'm excited about all the stuff we can do just decorating the house. It's good for me. It's good for her. So the point here is that in the context of lullaby, given in a way the kind of key it puts in a lock of experience, what caregivers are really thinking about. And what we're looking at over time is the ways in which these narratives change. We're particularly interested in a big developmental task for parents and babies that comes up as kids are toddlers, which is as a dyad going from an interaction which is largely based on observable things like crying and being wet and going to sleep to a world in which you understand that other people have an internal life and you have an internal life. And that at the intersection, there's the possibility of sharing experience. And the lullaby, thinking about the lullaby as a very powerful context in which that can happen, and thinking about documenting its occurrence, because we know from lots of other research that both children and caregivers' ability to think in that way about one another is a tremendous predictor of later outcomes, particularly in socio-emotional development. And I just have to say that in the wake of COP26, think about the absolute necessity for people to understand that my life affects your life. So the coal I burn is the air your children breathe, or my nation's hogging vaccine is the lack of vaccine in other countries. So I think not only at a intensely personal level and at a family level, but thinking much more globally, that capacity to think about the overlap and interplay between worlds is extremely important. So we're thinking about lullaby as a crucible for capturing and measuring those outcomes as well.
Wow, okay, that's wonderful, Denny, thank you. And very deep and wide-ranging, may I say. So I think it's given us all food for thought. Thank you. Could I ask you, what do you think is the most important aspect that we would see changing as a result of lullaby? You know, if you're able to measure and evaluate the impact on people taking part, at some point in the future, what would be the most significant impact, do you think?
You know, it's like when people say you get one wish and your wish is to have three other wishes.
Okay.
So one outcome.
Sorry.
So I can say three others. For me, I think one of the most important outcomes is to map that capacity for mutuality and empathy, which can be promoted. Lullaby is not the only way you can get to it, but as we saw today, it's a tremendously powerful way to get there. So that at a family level, at the level of human resources, I think having a cadre of both community workers, musicians, physicians, nurses, who are intensely aware that these kinds of experiences are as powerful for postnatal depression as is medication. And then, you know, finally, I think a much deeper understanding of the, you know, quite frankly, measurable impact of the arts as a human experience. I'd much rather fund the arts. Pharmacology can fund itself.
Yeah, I'd rather have a lullaby than a pill, that's for sure. That's really great, really, really thought-provoking. So I'm going to ask if we have got a researcher, Dr. Kerry Wilson, to join us. And Kerry, you're doing the evaluation, aren't you, of lullaby in Cheshire and Merseyside. So what do you think about what Denny shared, and is that useful to you as you embark on your own research and think about how you're going to evaluate lullaby?
It's incredibly useful. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to join you tonight. You mentioned earlier, Caroline, that both Denny and Tiffany have been incredibly generous in terms of what they've offered to the development of Lullaby in Cheshire and Merseyside. And I just want to say a personal thank you as a researcher to have had the opportunity to have learned from them. And the body of work that they've created at Carnegie Hall has been really fascinating in terms of the outcomes that they've already identified and what we kind of have a responsibility to pursue and to further investigate with the work in Cheshire and Merseyside, but also to think about how our research can add value to that body of knowledge and complement what already exists. And like I said, their time and the generosity that they're given in terms of their knowledge and experience has been invaluable. I'd also like to commend, while I can, Live Music Now and Improving Me for the very progressive attitude that they've shown towards evaluation and how they've embedded it in the development process. So I've been part of the conversation from very early on, thanks to Joe's very kind invitation. And that's enabled us to really think about what we want to do with evaluation as a community of interest with Denny and Tiffany and also with a wide range of stakeholders. So for example, we held a research development workshop back in May, where we had a very rich conversation with colleagues from public health, health psychology, and music education. And Denny and Tiffany joined us as well to think about the kind of outcomes that we might expect to see from Lullaby in Cheshire and Merseyside based on what we already know from the work in New York and from different rollouts of the programme internationally, but also what we aspire to see from it on a much more longitudinal basis. We also talked about what needs to go into the programme in terms of activities and inputs to make those kinds of outcomes happen. So we started to develop a logic model and a theory of change around the programme already very early on. And we had a good discussion about how we might measure these outcomes and how we might research them in terms of research methods that can be effectively but also appropriately applied, because obviously it's a very emotive context that the musicians are working in with young mums who might be experiencing different problems. So it needs to be a responsive programme of research that captures outcomes on multiple levels. And what we were able to do through that conversation was develop an evaluation framework that exists at kind of three levels or three tiers. And the first one is we're keen to look at how this affects or impacts on mums' subjective well-being, self-efficacy, and sense of agency. And we're going to measure that through adapt and standardised measures of those kind of outcomes. So the kind of thing that Georgina has already mentioned, the PERMA scale, those different aspects of subjective well-being. We're looking at that by using kind of scaled questionnaires with mums at the start, mid, and end point of the programme. But it's very important to complement that quantitative side of research with more qualitative, more heuristic explorations of the creative process in practice and the experience of taking part in that creative process. And as Pip and Georgina have already shared, there's some really lovely ethnographic work coming out of the programme through the musicians' journals, through the reflective diaries that mums are putting together. And we're also doing research interviews to really dive quite deeply into the experience with musicians and mums taking part to really capture the more incidental, nuanced aspects of that creative experience and how we can attribute any changes that are being reported by them to that creative experience itself. So that's the second level, looking at the creative experience in more depth. And then thirdly, so we go from the personal level with those measures of subjective well-being, self-efficacy and agency, the community level to look at that creative experience together, the experience of being creative together. And then thirdly, on a more macro level, through those stakeholder discussions, we know that it's important, particularly as this is a creative project that's been commissioned by the NHS, to think more holistically about how that social value translates into a cost benefit for commissioners and different stakeholders. So we will be looking at that through a social value lens using social return on investment. So it's quite a multifaceted framework that we've come to get that we've come up with, but it's about really capturing impact from different angles that kind of meets those objectives and outcomes that different stakeholders expect to see, but without losing the focus on the creative elements of the programme and the kind of beautiful emotive experiences that Georgina and Pip have already shared with us.
Great. Thanks so much. Thanks, Kerry. That's great. That's very, very detailed and very well structured, it sounds like. Well, the rest of us are just enjoying the music, that you're doing the serious work of thinking about how to evaluate outcomes, which is what we need for the NHS, of course. So thank you very much. And I'm going to hand back to Jo now, because, and Jo, of course, she is the powerhouse behind Baby Week, isn't she? So thanks so much to Jo for bringing everyone together and to help getting the Baby Week off the ground and organising everything with Keely, who's also here and is also one of the key movers behind Baby Week, who's organised the webinar today. So thanks very much, Keely. Jo, would you like to summarise, and perhaps if there's time for a little bit more music?
I will try. I mean, it was just so many layers to all the contributions, but I'll have a go at summarising the complexity of what's been shared, but also just wanted to say being part of this project has been absolutely amazing. And I think there's something about all the reflections from the contributors today about how, if you get it right, it's a mutually beneficial process for the workforce, be it the musicians or our NHS staff as well as the mums and babies. So Catherine opened from the NHS perspective with a vision for Cheshire and Merseyside as a place where we have a more fairer and more equitable world for all. And that very much mirrors where we sit as an NHS healthcare partnership, as a Marmot site. So that's not anything new or different, but what's really important is it's about a different approach to achieving that. But what she also emphasised was that this journey has been about embedding cultural interventions and engagement as a core element of any antenatal and perinatal journey. That's completely new in relation to the NHS experience and absolutely pivotal. And what we're trying to do as an NHS partnership is to share our learning journey with other equivalent services. And we've been particularly happy that Bradford have joined us today. So those elements are really, really pivotal in terms of setting that ambition. Tiffany followed with a clear illustration of the value having a core focus on partnerships and collaboration. Again, that's not anything new for the NHS. Our long-term plan is very clear that we need to be working across sector and across organisations. So it's something to be applauded and should be something that feels like a good fit for our other NHS partners. She also emphasised the importance of working with those families that are most disadvantaged, which again, in terms of the impact of COVID in amplifying health inequalities, it's provided us with a new and different toolkit to do that more effectively. And I think our community engagement team have really underlined how effective that having almost a Trojan horse in relation to music to draw people in and to build trust and engagement, but also to recognise that when the NHS often decides that people are difficult to reach or hard to reach, it's more a case of often we don't have the appropriate tools to reach those families. And what music has done for us is really helped us to do that really effectively and to build those relationships. The other key elements that Karen focused on was the role of music making in terms of an aspiration to create healthier and happier communities and helping us to imagine a new kind of healthcare workforce, which isn't just made out of clinicians and isn't just about tablets and pharmaceutical interventions. It's about relationships and it's about how we develop kindness and understanding and empathy and intuition. And again, Decca, Danny and Bannon really illustrated that how we can grow that empathy through that engagement with those so-called hard to reach groups in terms of the conversations that we have and the understanding that we're able to develop. We then moved on to Georgina, who just impacts how impactful the approach of the musicians is in its creativity and that intimate process that bears so much fruit, which is about building connections. And I think as an NHS service, we could learn so much in relation to our relationships with patients, but also with each other as healthcare professionals. she described the project as a listening project, and I think that is so apt, because we often find it too hard to listen effectively, and we need to be better at listening to each other. She talked about a non-hierarchical system and a celebration of our individuality, which just have to be applauded. I mean, it's just about how we develop and what a better world would look like. We then had Pip, who focused on the importance and the impact not only on the mums, but also the babies, and about the importance of how mums build bonds with their babies that we so often neglect as a NHS service. But we know it works, and we know that any investment in those early years pays huge dividends. So it was a really welcome reminder for what we already know, but we don't always practice. And in many ways, when Pip and Georgina were speaking, I kind of felt that perhaps we need to talk to our patient engagement teams, who have what is easy to count but doesn't really often make that difference. So I think what Georgina and Pip were starting to illustrate, which then Denny went on to underline, was the importance of counting what matters, not what necessarily easy to count, which is tendency for what we tend to do. So Denny, I was blown away by your presentation, as always, in relation to the value of documenting the experience of the musicians. They're our workforce at the end of the day. And we're all too aware currently in terms of pandemic and there's levels of exhaustion. We still haven't learned that we need to look after our workforce. So if anything, this really amplifies what we already know, but we need to do more about, and that is to look after each other. Healthy professionals help create healthy communities. So there's really a real need to not underestimate the value of those high levels of well-being to support flourishing communities. So really, again, just drawing on Dennis, and I've got so many notes, I don't know where to go in terms of the value I've found today. So I'm sure you all feel very similar and almost overawed. But what for me, the key messages from Denny were around mapping the capacity for mutuality and empathy. I just think that's so, so important where we are in this pandemic in terms of recovery. We're not going to recover unless we learn to harness those skills. They're so, so crucial. And Denny referred to the Lullaby Project as a crucible for capturing those transformative experiences, because that, at the end of the day, is what we want to do. We know that there is evidence there already in relation to music's impact on perinatal mental health, but we don't really share it that well. So I just think that this gives us greater license to start shouting more about what happens. And then the amazing Kerry, who responded so immediately to our call out for a researcher to support us in developing a theory of change and a logic model to be able to give us the ammunition and the evidence to go forward and proselytize about the value of the Lullaby Project. Feeling quite emotional. So I hope I've done justice to that, but it's just been a real amazing journey, I think, for all of us. But the most important thing is what our women and our babies are telling us, that it makes a difference. And I think we can't, you know, we can't underestimate the value of that, because there are so many things we do constantly that make no change whatsoever, but we continue to invest in them. And what we need to do is start investing in what works. So that's me. And I know there's a final clip from Karen, and I hope people are still with us to hear it. But we just thought it was really important to try and summarise, and we'll perhaps do some more formal notes that might do more justice to the process. But just a huge thank you to everyone today for being with us. And I know how tight time is. And obviously in the international differences in the clock, etc. So it's just wonderful to have everyone here today. And hopefully we'll see Lullaby everywhere in NHS regions going forward.
Thanks so much to all our Lullaby Project and Baby Week participants and organisers, and to the Cheshire and Merseyside Women and Children's Partnership for all they do to improve health and wellbeing services. To find out more, follow the links on our podcast page. Thank you for listening.